The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. Century of Lies is a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. Now for an update on a story we've been following for the past few weeks. Loyal listeners will recall that Roger Stone, the Republican political operative, was to be a keynote speaker at an upcoming marijuana business conference. A growing number of people and organizations have been speaking out against that as part of the hashtag DisownStone campaign. For folks tuning in for the first time, Roger Stone is a vile, hate-mongering, misogynistic, homophobic racist. He claims that the murder of Heather Heyer in Charlottesville at the right-wing extremist rally was a false flag operation by leftist counter-demonstrators, presumably intent on discrediting the KKK and Nazis. Stone said recently that attempts to impeach the current president would result in a civil war and threatened that members of Congress who support impeachment should fear for their lives. Stone has recently been worming his way into the marijuana business, thus his scheduled keynote address at the Cannabis World Business Conference and Expo. Well, a few weeks ago, a friend who was to appear at that conference dropped out in protest, to protest Stone's involvement. She made her protest public, becoming, as far as I can tell, the first in what became a long line of people. That person is our guest. She's a renowned researcher and expert on cannabis policies, a good friend and friend of the program, Dr. Amanda Ryman. Amanda, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Doug. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you. It is an absolute honor to have you here. Now, so first of all, congratulations. And would you mind now explaining to the listeners why congratulations are in order?
Well, as you very eloquently stated in your introduction, when I found out that Roger Stone was slated to be the keynote speaker at the Cannabis World Congress and Business Expo in Los Angeles, I immediately knew I was going to drop out. I could not imagine lending my credibility to his stage. I could not imagine applauding him or even giving him my attention. And I didn't believe his motives. I didn't believe that he was here because he's some big drug warrior who really cares about the issue. I believe that he's an opportunist. And like some other folks in the industry, unfortunately, has plans and designs on building a fortune on the backs of those who are most impacted by the drug war. So, I got together with some other activists, I will say mostly women, who also felt that this was an affront to the very deep history of our movement. And we started this boycott of the conference. We contacted sponsors and speakers to let them know that this is the person who was going to speak. We made his history public so that folks could understand why associating ourselves with someone like this was not the way to go for our industry. And then thankfully, the conference decided to do the right thing. And today they put out a press release saying that they were no longer going to have Roger Stone speak at their conference in Los Angeles or their upcoming conference in Boston.
That is a terrific success, and of course, this is being recorded on Wednesday, September 6th. So, Betty Aldworth is one of the folks you were working with. I interviewed her at the at Hempfest back in mid-August about the hashtag DisownStone campaign that y'all were starting, and so it took a couple of weeks. What kind of reaction did you get from people involved in marijuana businesses to this?
Well, it was really interesting because I felt that the reaction we got a lot of ways was connected to how long people had been working in this industry. I found that individuals who have been around for a while, who really understood the racist nature of the drug war, who were with the cannabis movement before it was an industry, they didn't hesitate. They immediately understood why we could not hold someone up like Roger Stone with any kind of admiration or validity in our industry. The pushback that we got more was from kind of the new wave of business people, the folks who don't really understand the history, the folks who don't know who Dennis Perone is, who don't even know who Ethan Nadelman is, and they're just here looking at cannabis as any other business. And in their mind, Roger Stone is this enigmatic guy who's really controversial and casts a lot of attention, and he's friends with Donald Trump, so we should have him come and speak at our conference. And so a lot of the pushback I got was, why aren't we inviting people with varying political views into this discussion. And I think that that really missed the mark, because we have no problem inviting people with differing political views into this discussion. I mean, it's very well known that Dana Rohrabacher has been a part of this movement for quite some time, and that he has political views that are quite in opposition with many of us in the movement. But it was the fact that Roger Stone is so public with his hate speech, the fact that he throws around racial slurs and then doesn't even realize the impact that the war on drugs has had on people of color. I mean, it's almost like asking people who have been physically abused to show up and applaud a speaker who is a known abuser. It just didn't make sense. And I think that there was a real divide between people who get the history and people who are coming in looking at this more as a business and an industry.
And of course, it's important, I suppose, to clarify, to make sure that people understand, it wasn't just that he was invited to sit on a panel. He was actually one of the keynote speakers. That's kind of how a conference says, this is a really important person you all should pay attention to. And well, I don't know whether he was being paid or not. I would imagine he was, but that's, yeah. Now, what kind of response did you get from people still in drug policy reform and the marijuana legalization movement?
Well, they really understood. I mean, you know, the Drug Policy Alliance was one of the first organizations involved with the conference to step back. And I think that, you know, again, folks who have been involved with this for a while, anybody that understands the history of marijuana prohibition in this country understands the importance of not inviting known racists and misogynists to be held up as keynote speakers at our industry conference. I mean, I've shared the stage with Kevin Sabet. I've shared the stage with people from NIDA, and I've had very civil conversations with these individuals. They never have crossed the line that Roger Stone has crossed. And the disrespect that he has shown for people that have been most impacted by cannabis prohibition is the exact reason why we have to draw that line. And the drug reformers understand that.
Right on, right on. For what it's worth, I've been on a panel with Dana Rohrabacher. I did manage to check his website, and after Charlottesville, he issued a statement condemning the KKK, condemning the Nazis. It was during that very brief time when our president had also said something almost intelligent, but then he backtracked. But during that brief time, Dana made his statement, and yeah. Unlike Roger Stone, he's not trying to claim that it was a false flag operation. He's not buying into that kind of madness. It's, I mean, you're right. There are lines that you cross, and an apology, sorry, is not quite enough.
And it's not just that, but Rohrabacher is actually doing things. Like, he's actually in Congress, introducing bills, telling people to vote to protect medical cannabis. Like, he's actually taking action. Stone has made these offhanded comments about how he spoke at some speech against the Rockefeller drug laws once in 1998. But let me tell you, Doug, you and I have been in this drug policy world for a few decades now. How many conferences has Roger Stone shown up at to talk about the evils of the war on drugs? I would say zero. So, you know, we've got folks that we may not agree with, but on this issue we come together and they actually do the work to make the change. And then we have people that just blow hot air.
And let's face it, his involvement with Nixon and then Reagan speaks volumes to what his real positions are. Now, moving forward, what impact do you think this is going to have on businesses? I've spoken a lot over the years about the split between the marijuana industry and the marijuana movement. Do you think that by bringing political concerns over justice and equality into such sharp focus, does the hashtag DisOnStone campaign show us a way to heal that split? Do you think it should heal?
Well, I think it's a starting point. I think it's a wake-up call. I think for a lot of folks, especially the drug reformers who are now moving into the cannabis space, you know, there was kind of an acknowledgement that, yeah, there's too many, you know, white people running businesses, and there's not enough women, and there's not enough people of color, and it's really hard for people of color to get a footing in the industry. And there's always been this recognition, but there hasn't been a whole lot of action. Besides the people of color themselves, right, like the Minority Cannabis Business Association. But it's not just up to them. And in fact, it's really up to us white people to make the change and to really get this going. So I'm hoping that this is a wake-up call for those of us who care about drug policy reform to say, wait a minute here, we really got to keep our eye on this, or else we're going to lose everything we fought for in terms of making the cannabis industry reflective of the cannabis movement.
Amen. Amen. I could not have said it better. That is, what you said. What absolutely. So, just once again, congratulations. This is a tremendous. It's a win. And this is great. Any closing thoughts for listeners? And where are you at these days? I lost track. You're at Flow Canna now, vice president of something or other, or do I have the title wrong? And
That's correct. Okay.
Vice president of communications, I think.
No, community relations.
Community relations.
I'm kind of getting back to my social work roots and doing community work out here in Mendocino. So yes, I've moved up to Mendocino County from Oakland. I am working with Flow Canna, and we're working to develop this 80-acre campus up here in Redwood Valley that's going to be centralized processing, testing, and manufacturing for the small sun-grown farmers in Mendocino and Humboldt counties. And it's also going to serve as an education center so that we can educate the public on cannabis, on organic farming, and really take advantage of the beautiful location that we are in to attract the public and to help educate them so that they can take these lessons back and help spread the word.
Very cool. And their website is Flow Canna. That's FLOWKANA.com if people want to find out more about that. Any closing thoughts for the listeners?
Well, I'm very happy to say I will be speaking at the conference in LA now that issue is taken care of. So I'm very excited because I'm going to be on a panel on cannabis and opiates, talking about harm reduction, with Mark Welty, who is a researcher from Ohio, who I recently completed a study with looking at cannabis substitution among medical cannabis patients, as well as Joe Schrank, who is the head of High Sobriety, the treatment center in LA that uses cannabis as a medication-assisted treatment. So I'm really glad that Roger Stone didn't get in the way of getting this really important information out to people, because cannabis and opiate substitution, I think, is something we're going to be hearing more and more about. And that's what we should be focusing on.
Terrific. Once again, folks, we've been speaking with Amanda Ryman, PhD, MSW, a lecturer at Berkeley, a brilliant researcher and expert on cannabis policies at the international, national, and local levels. All that and a good friend. Amanda, thank you so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
You are listening to Century of Lies, a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. We mentioned Dana Rohrabacher a few minutes ago. On September 5th, Dana spoke in Congress about the various medical marijuana amendments, including the one that has his name on it, the Rohrabacher-Blumenauer Amendment, which would prevent the Department of Justice from spending funds to go after state legal medical marijuana programs. Unfortunately, just a couple of days later, the Rules Committee of the House blocked that amendment from being included in the new funding bill. Several other amendments dealing with marijuana were also blocked. That means, unfortunately, there's going to be more of a struggle to try and get those amendments into the final bill. The Rules Committee is blocking it on the House side. The Senate has already looked at and looked favorably at a medical marijuana amendment. The problem is that the bills which each side has to pass will eventually have to be reconciled. And when they get to that reconciliation stage, anything goes. The budget process is ugly, and there are no guarantees. As it is, there is likely to be an extension of the current budget for another few months. The end of the federal fiscal year comes on September 30th. So by the close of business on September 30th, Congress and the President either agree a new budget or they agree on an extension of the previous budget, leaving most of the laws that had amendments which were enacted before in place. It's not a guarantee. This extension could, in fact, exclude certain amendments, including the medical marijuana ones, but so far, it's possible that they're going to be included in the extension. Again, though, that's just an extension of the past budget bill. The new budget does need to be approved eventually. When it is, whether or not that amendment makes it in, is going to make all the difference. Various courts have held that the Rohrabacher-Blumenauer Amendment does in fact prevent Department of Justice from going after state legal businesses. Unfortunately, if that amendment is not included in the next budget bill, then the gloves are off. As I said, Rohrabacher spoke on the 5th. Let's have a little bit of Dana's speech. Following audio comes to us courtesy of C-SPAN.
For us to turn our back on these seniors, to say that these people who have young children who had seizures and they couldn't stop them, and to turn our back on those people, to turn our back on our veterans, that's what this vote is all about. This isn't about, oh, well, somebody can just go smoke marijuana. And by the way, if an adult is smoking marijuana in their backyard, I don't think that we should waste police resources and billions of dollars of law enforcement money to try to stop an adult from using marijuana in his backyard. But that's not the issue. The issue is whether states that have legalized the medical use of it should be superseded by us here by the vote that we're going to have here in the next few days. Let me tell you something of how I didn't know how the public would respond to the fact that I am one of the leaders in this whole effort to legalize the medical use of cannabis. And, I was Ronald Reagan's speechwriter, and I've been a Republican all my life. I've been get the top score on conservatives groups that are, they're giving you a score of how you voted and everything. And I have received very high marks in all of those groups. And I have been a conservative vote. I've a conservative libertarian background. I was Ronald Reagan's speechwriter for 7.5 years in the White House. Well, I didn't know. I got elected in 1988, last year of Reagan's term in the White House. And I sort of slipped into this issue because it's a principled issue to me. The principle is freedom, liberty, justice. And if you're not hurting somebody else, but especially if we should let people who are suffering, at the very least, give them some leeway when it comes to medical uses. Well, I knew that I was getting a lot of publicity on this. And a fellow came into my office to talk to me about a totally different issue, about an aerospace issue. And I am one of the senior members of the Science Committee. And I said, now this guy represents to me my typical voter, my conservative voter in California. The conservative voter is a guy who, this guy had been a commander or a captain in the U.S. Navy, a pilot, and he was now in aerospace. And I'm sure he always voted Republican. And so I asked him, I said, look, what do you think about the fact that the guy you've been voting for all this time is now the leader in the fight to legalize medical marijuana for the people of this state and this country? And he looked at me and he said, Dana, you really don't know me very well. I said, well, I know you're a former pilot in the Navy, and you are now in aerospace, and you're a conservative vote. And he says, yeah, but you don't know that I have three sons. And the day after 9/11, they all marched off and joined the military. And then what you don't know also is a few years later, two of them came back. But the third one who came back wasn't my son anymore. The third one that came back was on the floor in seizures because he'd been in some kind of an explosion that had rattled his brain, and he was on the floor with these seizures and they wouldn't stop. How would you feel about your child on the floor having seizures that you cannot stop? And now we want to tell these people, we don't care about that. You're not going to get to try medical marijuana. Well, this guy said he tried everything, and they took him to the VA, and it didn't help. And after about a year, this guy said, one of the guys at the VA hospital pulled him aside and said, hey, you want to help your son? See me off campus. They saw him in his office off the VA hospital, and the guy said, look, your son needs marijuana. Here's the prescription. Here's how to use it. Go do it. And do you know what the guy said to me there in my office? He said, go do it. And do you know what the guy said to me there in my office? He said, my son hasn't had a seizure since that day. What do I want to do about you being the point man on legalizing medical marijuana? I want to go over and give you a big hug, is what he said. Now, I hope that my colleagues take this seriously, because there are children on the floor having these seizures. There are veterans waiting there in seizures. There are old folks who are having arthritis and they can't move their hands, or they're out there, they've lost their appetites in these senior citizens' homes. Yes, there is nothing wrong with us using cannabis to help alleviate their pain. And they've been doing that for 3 years, and now the Rules Committee may not even permit us to have a vote on it, and they will take it out of this bill. We will be taking this away without even having our people have to vote on it or not. Well, I say if you disagree with me, that's fine. If you don't think the drug cartels will be enriched, fine, come up and make your arguments. When I lost this vote on a number of occasions before we won 3 or 4 years ago, I lived with it. I said, fine, I lost the vote. I respect those people's opinion, and they beat me. Well, I expect that's what a democracy is supposed to be all about. That's what it's supposed to be all about. Let people be held accountable for this. Don't take it out of the bill. And if they take that out of the Justice Appropriations Bill, I'm asking my colleagues to stand up and vote against a rule that is shielding us from accountability, shielding us from having to have basically responsibility for handing billions of dollars over to the drug cartels. And now the argument, of course, is, there's an epidemic that's crossing America in this opiate. Well, yes, there is. And when young people or old people are given opiates by their doctors, that's what happens. They get addicted to the opiates. If their doctors have no alternative, like cannabis, to provide their patients with something that might help them with their challenge, well, then you're going to get opiates, and that's what's happened. Our doctors have been passing out opiates as if they're candy. It's the legalization of medical marijuana that makes it more likely that we will defeat the opiate epidemic and get our people back to a point where they can actually control their own lives. No one has ever died from an overdose of marijuana. Now, I can tell you this. I understand that people really want to help young people and others not to get addicted to drugs. And I will say, as I say, no one's ever been overdosed on cannabis. But yes, there are some serious concerns of why you don't want young people in particular using cannabis. But to make it illegal, to put people in jail for using this, for basically leaving the distribution of marijuana in the hands of criminals, is far worse in what happens than any of the things that happen if young people if anybody starts smoking a joint. And let me just say, I think young people, we need to talk to them seriously. And when we tell them we don't even think marijuana should be used for medical purposes, they tune out. But if we say, we know there are some legitimate uses for this, but when you're 20 years old, it's going to hurt your mind development. Do not use marijuana until at least you're after 20 years old, and we're only making it legal now in this bill, or if you have some medical problems. Well, the fact is that young people can understand that, and that's one of the reasons why we've got to have research into cannabis other than just leaving these things up, these opiates, as the easy answer for doctors. In fact, one of the greatest sins, I believe, committed against the American people in the last 100 years has been a lack of research into cannabis as a potential healthcare device, or no, should I say, entity, so that we have, instead of actually doing research into cannabis, for the last 100 years, research has been suppressed. No, there could be some really really wonderful things, and we are learning about them now. A few years ago, for example, Israel Israel had to lead the way on this, introduced a major research effort into cannabis, and their results have been spectacular. Why did that happen in Israel and not here? Don't we care about whether those things that they discovered there affects their people will help our people as well? No. We couldn't do that because we have people who are still living in the 1960s when to them, cannabis, marijuana, means everybody growing their hair long, smoking dope in the park, and fornicating in the park. And failing in life and becoming hippies and all of that. The bottom line is that image is destroying the well-being of millions of Americans today. We've got to get over that image because that is not what medical cannabis is all about. And as I say, young people under 20 years of age, I got no problem with outlawing it for them and having some kind of severe penalty for people selling that to them. So that we need to protect them because it does impact negatively on kids who are under 20 years of age or in that age group. But let me also note, those kids shouldn't be drinking as well. The same studies that show that marijuana will really hurt their development of their brains and affect their electric system also says when they overdrink at an early age, it has that same type of impact.
That was Dana Rohrabacher speaking on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives on September 5th, audio courtesy of C-SPAN. He was speaking, first of all, to defend his president, and secondly, to push the idea of his medical marijuana amendment. Unfortunately, those efforts failed, and the medical marijuana amendment was excluded by the House Rules Committee from the budget bill. The hope now is that the amendment will be included in the Senate side and make it through the final Senate version, and then that the House and Senate conferees who try to come up with the compromise would include that Rohrabacher-Blumenauer amendment on medical marijuana as part of the budget.
How about this one? So marijuana is legal in Nevada now, right? And I heard a story about this guy who won a lot of money, won like $100,000. The stoner came up to him and said, "Hey man, I know you won $100,000. I know really wouldn't ask this, but my girlfriend is very sick. I need $10,000 so she can have an operation." And the gambler says, "Well, how do I know if I give you this $10,000, you're not just gonna go buy some marijuana?" And the stoner goes, "Man, I have weed money."
That was a little bit of humor from Ngaio Bilim live at Seattle Hemp Fest. Ngaio performs all over the place. He's at a lot of these conferences. He's at a lot of festivals. He's at a lot of comedy clubs. He's a jobbing comedian. He's one of the funniest people I know. If you get a chance to see Ngaio, do it. You'll be glad you did. And well, that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. The Drug Truth Network is on Facebook. Please give its page a like. Drug War Facts is on Facebook, too. Give it a like and share it with friends. Remember, knowledge is power. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh, and of course, also at Drug Policy Facts. We'll be back in a week with 30 minutes of news and information about the drug war and this century of lies. For now, for the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long.
So long!
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.